Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High. On November 10th, the Forum celebrated its second birthday. And in the 2 years since we aired our original three podcasts, we have broadcast a total of 55 interviews with a wide range of IT thought leaders, and we've been very fortunate to have garnered a fast-growing and diverse set of listeners. Additionally, December 9th will be the year anniversary of the publication of my book, World-Class IT: Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs. In celebration of these two milestones, we're delighted to broadcast a series of five e-seminars aligned with each of the five principles of world-class IT. On November 22nd, we released our interview on World-Class IT Principle 1, People, with Gregor Baylor, the former CIO of Capital One. On November 29th, we broadcast our interview with Mark Settle, the CIO of BMC Software, covering World-Class IT Principle 2, Infrastructure. Today, we'll broadcast our interview with Randy Spratt, the CIO and CTO of McKesson, speaking about Principle 3, Project and Portfolio Management. Our final two interviews will be with John Bausche, the former CEO of Ameristar Casinos, and the former CIO of Harrah's Entertainment, speaking about Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, and Bob Ouellette, the CEO of Alfutame and the former CEO of Best Buy International, speaking about Principle 5, External Partnerships. These e-seminars were produced by Ziff Davis Enterprise and rebroadcast here with their permission. I also want to thank the former editor-in-chief of CIO Insight, Brian Watson, who introduces each session and directs questions at the end of the interview. If you would like to view the slides associated with this interview, links to the MP4 files are on our website at www.metisstrategy.com. With that, I'm delighted to introduce the third in our series of five interviews, Randy Spratt, speaking about World-Class IT Principle 3, Project and Portfolio Management.
Hello, everyone. This is Brian Watson for CIO Insight. Welcome to today's e-seminar, Building a World-Class IT Organization. Our program gives you all the benefits of being in a trade show panel discussion, all without leaving your office. This is our third installment in the series. We hope you had a chance to join us for the previous two sessions with Gregor Baylor, former CIO of Capital One and NASDAQ, and Mark Settle, CIO of BMC. If you did, welcome back. If this is your first e-seminar, welcome aboard. Now let's get started. It's my pleasure to introduce Peter High, founder and president of MetaStrategy, a Washington, D.C.-based consulting firm. Peter is the author of a great new book, World-Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs. I highly recommend this book to all current and aspiring IT leaders. Peter works with some of the best CIOs in the business, and we're happy to welcome one of them today. Randy Spratt is CIO and CTO of McKesson, the healthcare technology giant. Today, Peter and Randy will discuss the third principle in Peter's book, Project and Portfolio Management. Peter, take it away.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Brian. And Randy, thank you so much for being here.
It's my pleasure and very pleased to be here.
Wonderful. Well, it is so great to have Randy here, especially as we're talking about Principle 3, which is Project and Portfolio Management, as Randy is the CIO and CTO of one of the largest companies in the U.S. and the largest healthcare company. So when it comes to managing a set of projects, a portfolio of projects, he is someone who certainly has grappled with some of the most complex issues out there, and we'll certainly look forward to discussing all of those today. Before getting into that discussion, though, I will simply mention the background on the principles themselves. Again, for those who listened to the first two podcasts, you'll recall the conversation about the first two. Very briefly, the principles of world-class IT begin with people, the first principle. And essentially, that is the foundational principle of this methodology. If you don't have the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it's very difficult to achieve much else. The second principle is infrastructure. This is really the on-off switch, from the reactive to the proactive organization. Those organizations who are constantly fighting fires naturally don't carve up the appropriate amount of time to think about the future, to think about what the IT department can do on behalf of the business. For those, however, who have a reliable infrastructure can necessarily then begin to think more strategically on behalf of the business about what then they can deliver to the business. That then takes us to the third principle, the one that we'll be speaking about today, project and portfolio management. This is really the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the business, ensuring that those the right selection of projects as part of the portfolio are there, as well as making sure that you're delivering them on time, on budget, on scope, and so forth, and meeting the business's expectations. Those first three principles become the ante, if you will, to accomplishing the fourth, which is IT and business partnerships. Without having the right people in place that the business trusts, without having a reliable infrastructure, and also without delivering projects and portfolios that deliver what the business needs, very difficult to achieve the fourth principle or even to be asked to the strategy setting table by the business. However, if those first three are going well, then the CIO, the CTO ought to earn his or her place at that strategy setting table. In the fourth principle, the IT executive would have contributed to the conversation of that which is strategic as well as that which is not. And in determining what that which is not, oftentimes CIOs and CTOs believe, then understand better what things might be better managed by external partners. And that's really the core or the essence of the fifth principle, engaging the right external partners, ensuring they're delivering against the service level agreements that have been put in place and so forth. This model is presented as a continuum because if you're doing the first all five of these well, it then becomes an easier place to recruit, train, and retain the best employees. And therefore, with each turnaround, with the improvements made to each, the bond becomes stronger, and that becomes that virtuous cycle towards sustainable IT excellence. We will be talking about the third principle, as aforementioned, and I'll just very briefly call up those sub-principles associated with that, and so that you can see each of the sub-principles here. Just as with the principles introduced on the prior page, these also form a virtuous cycle. These are like links in a chain, if you will. One begets the next, and in fact, strong sub-principles beget stronger ones behind it, and likewise, where there are weaknesses in one of these areas, it may in turn lead to weaknesses in other areas. And therefore, just as with the first five principles, if these are done correctly, if these are done effectively, then in fact, with each turnaround, there ought to be a virtuous cycle towards improved performance as well. Rather than introducing the essence, as there are quite a number of sub-principles there, of each of those sub-principles, I will simply leave it to the conversation that I'm about to embark on with Randy to cover some of these through the conversation that we'll have. And without further ado, why don't we get to the main attraction here, which is, in fact, the conversation with Randy Spratt. As aforementioned, Randy is the CIO and CTO of McKesson Corporation, again, the largest healthcare company in the U.S. He runs the corporate IT function. He's also works with the CIOs of each of the business units. With McKesson's size, those business units themselves are essentially the size of Fortune 500 companies also. And so while providing guidance to those divisional CIOs and running the corporate standards and developing the centralized function that he oversees, he certainly does have quite a complex portfolio, and so certainly an appropriate person to talk about how best to manage a portfolio and grapple with that complexity. Randy, let's get into the conversation. I wanted to start by simply asking, how do project requests come to your attention? Are they typically articulated by your business partners, or are they derived internally, or is it some combination of that?
Well, it's certainly a combination. We, as you note, we have a federated information technology model at McKesson. And I think to understand how the project requests flow, we need to at least briefly understand how IT works at McKesson. Each of our 10 major divisions, which as you noted, are of substantial size, have a divisional CIO that is really responsible for establishing the application direction and the application needs to fulfill the individual business strategies. Then we have an infrastructure organization, which is part of my responsibility, that provides the global infrastructure capabilities and certain global applications for the organization, and also carries some stewardship functions such as information security and information risk management. So these requests will typically flow from either of the businesses where they're trying to stand up a new capability or expand a capability to meet a market expansion or a new market capability. or they will come internally in response to business needs to improve productivity or lower total cost of ownership or improve our risk profile. But however they surface, they are reviewed by the collected body of CIOs to make sure that we all have alignment in what we're setting out to do, that the infrastructure group isn't running off in a direction that is counter to the business's needs and requirements, and that we maintain the agility and the variety of different services and service levels that our many different businesses may require.
And may I ask, Randy, how do you determine when to invest in something centrally to be then implemented by across the businesses versus those solutions that are relevant for only one or a couple of business units? Is there a process or a test that you have in place to determine where the CIO of a business unit can operate autonomously versus those situations where it ought to be a central investment that's made across the divisions?
Well, none of the CIOs operate completely autonomously above a certain level of investment. Mm-hmm. Small projects or very localized projects are certainly completely within their scope, but anything of size or anything that might affect more than one business or even a substantial number of employees comes before our CIO Council for review. In all cases, we share a common review process that's based on a business case. So in your model, the ideation or idea generation and prioritization and then budgeting all happen through the development and review and research and then finally approval of a business case that describes ultimately the cost, the approach, the timeline, the benefits, and the net present value of the investment over time. So whether it's an internally or centrally mounted effort, or whether it's a business unit project, we all go through that same common process and all have a common language and common approach to understanding the value of those investments.
And Randy, I know from our past conversations that once that happens, there are a series of councils that you sit on and chair in many cases in order to review those and prioritize those IT initiatives. Can you take a moment to describe how they work and as well as the benefits you've garnered from putting them in place? I know that's something that was established in your administration.
Sure. When I came on the job, we had business units that each were largely operating independently with respect to their IT, and as a result, we weren't sharing expertise, we weren't aligned in what we were setting out to do or how we were setting out to do it, and the IT spend was fairly opaque across the business and difficult to determine whether we were really gaining value from it. So I set up a hierarchy of governance bodies, the topmost body reporting into the executive committee of the company. And that topmost body is made up of the business unit presidents of each of the 10 divisions of McKesson. So very large executive jobs. And the fundamental model there being that IT is a shared endeavor, a shared service that's designed to serve all of the businesses to one regard or another. And therefore, the businesses must govern and review the strategies, review the budgets, and review the performance of the IT organizations if we're to be aligned with their needs and aligned with their business strategies. Underneath that governance board sits the CIO Council, which is made up of the divisional CIOs. I chair that council. We do the day-to-day work, if you will, of managing our joint portfolios, reviewing the strength of our people, the expertise and capabilities and competencies we need, and establishing the IT strategies for the businesses and for the corporation. Virtually all business cases are reviewed at that level. And then underneath that CIO council sits a technology council, which is made up of some of the top architects and technology minds across the business. Whenever the CIO council sets off on an initiative, they will charter the technology council to research and recommend best approaches. So, for example, we wanted to completely revamp our storage strategy. We had certain key drivers that we were trying to achieve at the CIO level. We handed that off to the technology council to go research the current vendors, vendor capabilities, economic models, and the like, and come back with recommendations about how to revamp that strategy. So all three of those bodies, the governance board, the CIO council, and the technology council, are involved in some phase or stage of the development, review, and approval of these business cases, and then ultimately an execution of the work against those business cases.
Understood. And was this, the establishment of these, I can only imagine, was partially due to your hoping to get your arms around the very complex and probably increasing number of demands of your time and your team's time. To what extent did the business recognize this as a need to become more engaged, to understand what collectively the organization was demanding of IT services, as well as participating in the conversation of how best to prioritize?
Well, I think that in the beginning they understood that it wasn't working well. And I would say there were two opposing tensions that were not being resolved. At the business level, the businesses were trying to actively take back responsibility for all of their IT. They were beginning to set up their own data centers, their own infrastructures, their own security capabilities, and so on. And at the same time, our chief executive was trying to gain the economies of scale and and leverage a large-scale infrastructure across the corporation, but the infrastructure group really didn't have the credibility to lay claim to being able to perform at that level. So this essentially became the place where we worked out those differences, where we went through and looked at what should be shared and what should be unique to the business, and established the criteria, the service level agreements, and the strategies to build capability, competence, and expertise to perform on those agreements, and ways to measure and report performance against not only our operational goals but our financial goals. So, in essence, we started treating IT like a business within a business, and moved to a place where IT was accountable directly back to the business for competitive cost, competitive quality, and competitive timeliness. Without that business level credibility, we simply would have continued to move to decentralize IT. Over the years, it's turned out to be an extremely effective way of gaining alignment. The trust has grown to a point where there's a great deal of work between and among the business units. We measure, for example, the satisfaction of our business units with IT services. This year, we hit 96% overall satisfaction of IT overall, as perceived by our business unit presidents and executives. So that's come a long way in 5 years.
That's amazing. That's quite a story to tell. I can only imagine that by including the business to a much greater degree in these decisions and apprising them of the demands that are coming from the different parts of the business, that they developed a better appreciation for what IT could do for the organization. May I assume then that business has become a bit more IT savvy by virtue of this education they're getting through each turn of these council meetings?
I think they do, absolutely. I think they have a greater understanding of what IT can do for them and how IT helps them fulfill their strategies when they have confidence in the ability to deliver. This is one reason I really like your virtuous cycle, because it's really hard to, I think, pick apart these various activities and say any one of them is responsible for success. portfolio management depends hugely on alignment with strategy and the ability to perform on your projects, or you have no claim to be able to effectively manage the portfolio investment.
Very good point, and thank you. Let's move on. How are project needs that emerge in one business unit or best practices that come from one business unit spread to others? Is it actually through those councils where an identification of something that may have been done one-off in one part of the business or an idea that appears to be relevant for mostly for one business can then be thought through as to its relevance beyond that point?
Yes, and it happens both, I would say, from a bottom-up level and a top-down level. So bottom-up level, a business will bring forward let's say someone's got a need for a contract management system. And when they bring that to the council, now understand McKesson is a very large company and there isn't anybody that understands all of the technologies we have deployed. When they bring that project before the council for review, everyone's got an opportunity to say, you know, we've got one of those, or those, you know, this subdivision has one of those, let's look at that. And the conversation begins to occur about convergence. And instead of continuing to buy subscale applications that serve individual needs across the business, we begin to have the conversations about, well, can we expand our licensing agreement here? Or, you know, this one's at end of life anyway. Can we double up and make a larger project out of it and save both of us money? So it's an opportunity for us to look for those convergent events that take complexity out of our application landscape. Now, at the top-down level, every year we go through a series of meetings together where we review each other's business strategies and the IT implications of those strategies, whether it's growth in capacity or whether it's net new capabilities. And in doing so, we have an opportunity to make similar alignments and look at similar opportunities for convergence. But I think even more importantly, it lets us start planning around expertise pools and competency pools and start looking at our purchasing power as we converge those applications.
I see. A lot of our conversation is focused on the way in which projects enter into the pipeline, enter into the portfolio. Once they are, can you talk about how they are, how they're managed, how the results, whether in process or once completed, are reported, how the feedback is shared through IT and where relevant to the different parts of the business?
Yes, there's, so again, these projects could be separated into two piles. One would be projects that are largely done on behalf of a business and projects that are affecting many businesses. In that first pile, the projects are usually a joint undertaking by the application, the people in the business that are selecting and managing the application, and the infrastructure teams. Those projects are reviewed on a regular basis within the business with the infrastructure team present, and the results and the status of those projects are reviewed at my executive team level on a monthly basis as well to make sure that we're appropriately prioritizing work and moving resources to projects that may need some extra help at any given moment. So we treat our businesses like customers. We actually, the infrastructure team actually has an account plan for each of the internal businesses that describes their priorities, describes the things that we need to hit to make them successful, and we track that account plan throughout the year. For multi-business projects, those are we typically will set up a small governance body directly for the project that's comprised of the key stakeholders, each of the businesses that are affected and the stakeholders that are actually working to accomplish the project. And if it's truly a McKesson-wide project, those those governance bodies become synonymous with the larger councils, and the projects are reviewed at that level. But at one level or another, every single one of these projects is reviewed monthly by the project owners, project managers, project team, and our job becomes to shift and adjust resources to keep them successful.
Excellent. One final question before we open it up to the broader audience for questions. I think I'm hearing you say that as I extrapolate the various levels in which you think about and manage the portfolio of project investments under your purview, that clearly project management skills are in the ascendance right now, are becoming more important, and also probably those people who have solid business skills in order to communicate, both draw from the business their needs, but also communicate back to them how IT is solving their needs, I imagine is another sort of skill set that's becoming more important. Could you confirm that first and also talk about how, as this is evolving, if there are other skills that are increasing in demand from your perspective?
Sure. We have a little mantra that everything in IT is either a process or a project. And as a result, investment in top-notch process management and process improvement skills and investment in top-notch project management and project execution skills are paramount to the success of IT. And those, of course, feed on each other. If you don't have the ability to perform well on new projects and you don't have the processes behind that work as well as the processes behind effective IT-run operations, you're not playing at a table stakes level and you probably don't deserve to be competing for your business's IT services. So we pay a lot of attention to that. We've hired some of the best people in the industry and it's paid off. And it's important for the businesses to know and our project managers to know that the performance tracking doesn't end when the project's over. Each one of these projects has a, as I said, a business case behind it that is intended to produce benefit. And we actually will bring in either business analysts or, for very large projects, internal audit to make sure that we have actually taken the benefit or the savings that each one of these projects proposes. And that introduces a level of discipline that makes the reality of that business change part of the project team's responsibility. It's not just implementing a system and walking away. It's actually accomplishing the process change and the people change needed to achieve the intended purpose of the technology.
That's wonderful. It makes perfect sense, of course, but easier said than done, making it all the more impressive that that's something that you've accomplished, Randy. Brian, do we have some time for some questions?
Yeah, we do have a couple of minutes left for some questions. Peter and Randy, thank you very much for a great conversation. Randy, thanks for shedding so much light on the way that you do things at McKesson. And I think some of the questions that have come up, I think, sort of surround, okay, you're at a massive company. We're at sort of smaller companies. You know, what sort of advice could you give us? We'll get to one of those in a second. One of the questions that jumped out for me comes from Phil, and he's asking, is project management more about delegation or micromanagement? Meaning, essentially, what should the CIO's role be when you get down into, you know, the details of each project, and being that there can be so many of them happening at once?
Well, I think that that micromanagement for a CIO is a danger, and it's a very slippery slope. You hire people for their skills, their capabilities, and their ability to manage an effective project and project team is certainly one of the critical roles that underpin IT success. So I think that, first of all, it's important to have a consistent way or a consistent process of how you look at your projects. If you start focusing in on only the ones that are in trouble or start focusing in on only the ones that are high profile, then I think you're running the risk of taking over the project manager's job. So what we do, for example, is we spent over a year developing a set of key metrics, key process indicators and performance indicators that describe the health of our projects. Mm-hmm. And every month we'll go down through and briefly touch on the large profile projects that are all green, just to make sure we're clear on where they are, and focus a lot of our energies on the ones that are beginning to trend yellow or that are in a red status, and actually bring the project team members into those meetings to talk about their projects and what they're doing. And the questions tend to become more, what can we do to help? What additional resources do you need? How is the customer doing with this? Is there something we can do to break down any political barriers or whatever? But you can't take over the project manager's job and expect them to be effective.
Right. Understandable. Another question that came up a few times, actually, Edward was asking this question. When you mentioned about having the councils and that constant communication kind of helps the business actually become more IT savvy, Edward was asking how can we, sort of smaller company CIO, make our businesses, our business counterparts, more IT savvy about project management especially. And I think probably what he's getting at is the fact that a lot of the time the business comes and says, I want this, do this. What advice would you give them for sort of educating their business counterparts on how to most effectively understand what goes into all this?
Well, when I say IT savvy, I think it's important to get a good grounding in what that means. I don't think it's IT's job to educate all stakeholders in the complexities or the technologies or the coolness or whatever it is you find in technology. I think it's important to educate the businesses in what it takes to get a technology job done, and to bring forward the ideas, the consulting, if you will, about what IT can do to help their business and their business strategies.
Mm.
So in the end, you're back to this virtuous cycle. You have to be able to perform, and you have to be able to meet the commitments that you make, and to be able to regularly review the status and the progress of the projects you take on, so that the business gains confidence in your ability to do what you said you were going to do. That helps build the trusted relationship, but you can't possibly advise a business about what technology might do to advance their strategies or advance new strategies that they may be willing to consider unless you have that credibility. So, for example, we have six or seven of our businesses that each have fairly large call centers. And some of these call centers were aging technologies. They were all different technologies. We were able to perform in one or two of those call centers on some key projects to refresh their systems and their switches and networks that underlie it. And then came back to the entire business and said, look, here's a project to standardize on these technologies across all of the businesses. And we can drop this much cost out. We can take this many people out. It'll raise the capability, the flexibility, and we've got proof points in these two businesses to show that we can do this well.
Right.
So, that to me is how you educate a business: is show that you can perform, and then show that you can take that capability and apply it more broadly to achieve business objectives, whether it's lowering cost or improving market coverage or mounting a new product or service.
That's some great advice. I think that just about wraps up our time today. So we'd like to thank Peter High and Randy Spratt for a really, really interesting conversation. I hope everybody today is walking away with some helpful information from what you've heard from our speakers. Again, this is Brian Watson for CIO Insight. We'd like to thank you all again for joining us.